It's a special edition of the Initial Reaction podcast. We are bi-coastal today. I'm J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers in Milwaukee, the greater Milwaukee area, and we're going across the state. We're going to the next state over. We're going to Winona to talk to John Casper, who you may know him from the Winona Daily News. You may know him from the La Crosse Tribune. He covers prep sports over there. John, welcome back. It's been a good, 2 years since you've been on the podcast.
Yeah, it has. And, you know, I was so flabbergasted by what the WIA tried to do yesterday that I moved to Minnesota.
That's right. You left the state.
Yep.
It was a crazy day, which is why we are coming to you for the second time this week. It was a crazy day on Thursday. The WIA dropped bombshell after bombshell. The one that I think everybody is paying attention to is the announcement that a shot clock, presumably, will be implemented in varsity basketball by the 2019-2020 season. Oh, man, I'm going to love it when the year 2020 rolls around. I'm going to say it like Barbara Walters all the time. It's the year 2020.
Well, hopefully we are both in a position to be reporting on high school basketball in the year 2020.
That is a good point. I will probably be in finance or something like that by then. But that's coming. They also announced some seating changes to wrestling and basketball. They announced that hockey will now have two divisions, which affects you more than me because you're the Minnesotan here. So you,
right.
You know all about that. And they announced that there's going to be a new plan that they're going to forward. This hasn't been voted on yet, but that they're going to propose that will change some of the layout for basketball in terms of divisional placement. Basically, schools in urban environments, small enrollments, but urban environments will be pushed up a division or two. It was a crazy day, John. Could you believe it?
Yeah, and I don't know if you knew that this was kind of coming. I'm kind of out of touch a little bit with the WIA when their board of control meetings are. So usually these things kind of take me by surprise, but yesterday it was just one thing after another, and you're seeing these tweets come out from people and you're like, whoa, what is going on? Why is today all of a sudden the day that they decide to drop all this?
Yes, and so we will not bury the lead. We'll talk about the shot clock first, because that's the thing that's on everybody's mind. Whether or not that is something that would be good for the game of high school basketball. And I think that For me, off the top, it comes down to, I'm curious to know what the motives are here, because it sounds like coaches are a little bit split on whether or not this would be a good thing. People maybe around the game are excited by it as fans, because it might speed up some of the possessions and whatnot. You might get maybe higher scoring games, maybe better quality of play. That's debatable, but I think there are people that are legitimately for this and legitimately against it, and I just don't know why they decided to do it. I don't know what would be the genesis of that other than make the game more exciting or make it more similar to the college game. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if this came from, you know, the coaches advisory committee or where this necessarily came from. You know, you hear rumblings about it, but it seems like it's always from a fan after they, you know, that Anigo Rhinelander, I think it was Anigo Rhinelander, that famous playoff game that was 14-11 year or two ago.
Yes.
You know, I think when, and I hear it too, even on this side of the Mississippi River, there's a team, Rushford Peterson, who is so well coached in just passing the ball around. So they will just literally just pass the ball around for a minute and wait until that one opening happens, and then they will attack the basket. And there are, every time I cover them against another team in our area, that team's fans gets all up in arms. They're like, that's not basketball. You know why?
Right.
There should be a shot clock. Like that is basketball. That is one way to play the game. And Rusher Peterson plays it very well. You know, I don't know if there are coaches that have more talent on their teams that want this style, that they've run into a situation where a team like that may not have enough talent, you know, just kind of limits the number of possessions in the game and is able to spring some of these upsets. Maybe they want to be sure that come playoff time, you know, the best teams are making it to the Kohl Center. But yeah, I don't really know where this has come from. You know, I made it quite clear on Twitter that I'm against it. I've always been against it. You know, every time somebody tries to bring it up, I try to explain it to them why it's a bad idea. And I mean, the big one in my mind is the cost. You know, it's going to cost these school districts a lot of money to not only install these things, but to get somebody to run them. And I'm sure, you know, school districts in Wisconsin are facing the same types of things that school districts over here are facing, where, you know, you're looking for change under couch cushions just to make payroll at the end of the year. I don't know where these school districts are going to get $4,000 at least to pay for these systems.
Right, and my problem with it has always been on the logistical end. I don't know if I feel very strongly one way or the other about whether or not we should have them at all. I think one coach told me that he didn't think it necessarily favored the better team. That's sort of the running thought, is that the better team is going to be the one that benefits here, and blowouts are going to become even bigger blowouts. But I'm surprised to hear that. So for me, it's always been about logistics. That's a very unique position, the person who runs the shot clock. They have an impact in what happens on the field without physically being on the field. They're not just responding to what the referee wants them to do. They're responding to what they actually see on the court. They are an official. So it's a very difficult thing to find people that are trained, talented enough. I mean, you hear people who run scoreboards that are like, I'm getting out of that business in 2019, 2020. I don't want to run a shot clock. So that's always been my concern. Now, if we can assume, let's assume that the money will not be an issue, that they will put a plan in place, whether the WIAA subsidizes it or the schools figure it out amongst themselves, that they can afford this. And let's also assume that they find people who can run the clock. If it's still a good idea,
and let's assume that they find scores tables big enough. I mean, I'm sure you go to many games just like I do, and there's no room for us on the scores table.
Right, right.
So there's not going to be room for another person on the scores table either. So.
No, I agree with that. And moreover, where are they going to put these clocks? I heard from one coach who said that he was in a gym, a very new gym, and he looked up at the backboard, and the clocks aren't going to go up there. It's just not built that way. So now it becomes, well, how do you display it? How are we going to get those clocks in a place where people can see them? And, you know, I don't know. But let's say the logistics all work out, and we're talking just about whether or not a shot clock is a good idea in theory. And now I think it's a little up in the air. I mean, I don't know. I think it's one of those things that over time you would see, well, people will figure it out. The coaching will change dramatically, but they will ultimately figure it out. On the other hand, it's maybe something that can be seen as a non-necessity. I don't know if the game was suffering to the point that we needed, especially with the introduction of halves. I mean, you have had those in Minnesota for a while.
Oh, halves are so nice.
They are. And they increase scoring. I feel like the games move a lot better. I mean, honestly, I was not bored at any basketball games I attended this year once I saw halves.
Right, right. And I mean, you know, I think that this is going to make the game more boring. I think it's going to force teams to play similar styles. I got into it, on Twitter with a few people yesterday, and you can still play a slowdown style, but only to a certain point. I mean, on the 35 second shot clock, which if we're going to have a shot clock, I think 35 seconds is about right. I think once you get into your offense, you know, you only have at that point, you know, maybe 28, 25 seconds if you're bringing all the ball up the court. So, yeah, you can slow it down, but I don't think that you can slow it down the way that you want to do it. And it's going to lead to a lot of bad shots for teams who like to play a little bit more deliberate pace. You know, they're going to get to 5 or 10 seconds, and instead of maybe making that extra pass or two, you're going to have more kids that are just going to turn around and shoot, or, you know, try to force something that really isn't there.
It definitely favors the defense, who now no longer has to be worried about creating turnovers. Now it's about shortening the possession, and you put pressure in the backcourt. That's, you know, 10 fewer seconds that teams have to get into their sets. So defensively, you no longer you still work hard, but you no longer have to overcommit. You don't have to, you don't have to take risks on defense because the possession is going to end within a small window of time. As an offensive player, you're going to have to react to sets a lot more differently. You're going to see different defenses and switching and stuff. You don't have time to feel that out, figure out what's going to happen. You got to move the ball. You've got to identify, address it. I mean, point guards, their skill level is going to have to increase here because now they're going to be in charge of making decisions much more quickly than they're used to making. So that, and from a coaching standpoint, we're talking about pretty dramatic changes. You're going to see a lot more sets for end of clock sets. You know, previously that only mattered at the end of halftime in the game. Well, now you got to run it every, you know, you might use it. You might have to have four or five different plays that work that way because you're going to see it several times a game.
Yeah. And, you know, for the top level teams in the state, this might be a good thing. You know, I imagine, even some of the leagues that you cover, some of the best teams in those leagues, this might be a good thing for them. It is going to create, you know, some really entertaining games because those kids play basketball year round, and, you know, I think they can handle it. I think what it's going to hurt is those guys who just play basketball from November until February. you know, I think it's going to take a while for them to get used to this. Even if this is a yearly thing, I think it's going to take them later in the season to kind of get their offense down, and it's going to lead to less interesting games at the beginning of the year, and it's going to lead to more blowouts, I think, especially early on when there's a big talent mismatch.
You did mention that Antigo game, which is a high-profile case of stalling. Certainly we can draw, you know, go back in time. Tom Diener's Milwaukee Vincent teams had no problem taking the air out of the ball. There was a case of the girls' state championship game, Division I, a couple years ago, where Maguanago held the ball. Verona refused to come out of their zone. Maguanago refused to budge on offense. And
that's, I mean, that's the thing. It takes two teams to stall. You know, it takes one team to hold the ball and the other team to let them. You know, I covered Oshkosh West back in the day, and they had when they were making their state tournament runs, and right before that, they had a front line of, I think it was like 6'8", 6'6", 6'7". So all they would do is kind of just sit in the zone.
Zone it, baby.
And because you can't beat that. I mean, you cannot in high school, you can, if you're a 5'8" point guard, you cannot get a shot up over a 6'8" kid unless you're a contortionist. And you know, none of these kids are. So when they played Oshkosh North, Oshkosh North was really good, and their strength was guards. They didn't want to play against the zone. You know, they wanted Oshkosh West to come out and chase them. So they held the ball for the last 4 minutes of the first half. And I remember thinking, you know, there should almost be a penalty on the defense in this situation. I don't know if there's some sort of NBA defensive 3-second like call that you can make, as if you're not going to have at least one defender out beyond the 3-point line. If that is some sort of foul, I don't know how you'd even go about, you know, awarding fouls in those situations. But I think the defense is as much to blame in a lot of these situations, because the offense should be able to dictate the way that it wants to play. If it wants you to come out, you know, you should try and come out and try to play their game.
Teams with those three big guys you're talking about, they love this move. They are looking forward. Of course, they can't really project what 19-20 is going to look like, but teams that go big are going to love this move. But we should point out that stalling stuff, it doesn't happen very often, and I think you and I would agree with that.
Yeah.
There's a very small percentage of games where we see stalling. It's not something kids want to do. It's not something that coaches like to coach. So that's a really small piece of the puzzle. I'm just curious then, going back to my initial question, what the motivation would have been. And I liken that to perhaps maybe the overtime rules in football. Now, high school has changed the rules a few times. College has changed it a few times. But ultimately, it seems as though high school was trying to keep up with what was going on at college, not for any particular reason other than that just is the most entertaining version of the game, perhaps the most fair version of the game. I wonder if they're just trying to make the high school game, the game of basketball, look like it's college and pro contemporaries, because the shot clock is a completely different style of play, and maybe they just felt that there was time for an update. I don't know. I don't know if that was crucial.
Yeah,
or that was top of mind.
It might be, and I mean, you know, the problem with that is that I know you well know, and maybe parents don't, and maybe some coaches don't. I mean, how many high school kids go on to play college basketball, even at a D3 level? Like you're talking like the cream of the crop that go on there, and I think you may be leaving some kids behind who cannot keep up with this style of play, and who maybe won't see the floor as much because they can't handle it. I don't know. You're right. I don't know where this came from. I don't know. I'm just kind of flabbergasted by it, and maybe, you know, the fact that it is a few years down the road, maybe there's time for, if there are a lot of coaches who are against it, to maybe try to do something about it. But it seems, I don't think the WIA does anything like this on their own.
I agree.
I don't think that they were, I know people like to rip on the WIA. I know, you know, we have, but I don't think they make a decision as big as this without some committee somewhere saying this is what we want.
I definitely agree with that. And that's why I'm surprised to see some of the dissension I've seen amongst coaches I've talked to, that they don't like this idea. That surprised me.
And I think the one thing that's kind of weird, most of the coaches I see that are in favor of it have either coached in the college game at some point.
Yes, yeah.
Or maybe to kind of tend to coach like a higher level of a team. Or I see a lot of AAU coaches that are in favor of it.
Well, of course.
Yes. Because, yeah. Right, right. I don't know. I don't know why the high school game has to be like, I don't know why everything's got to be the same. That just drives me nuts. It's, and this is totally off topic, but this is what drives me nuts when people attack the WNBA for not being like the NBA. It's two totally different things.
Sure.
Let's have high school basketball be high school basketball and college basketball be college basketball. Let's not try to make it a minor leagues for colleges. Let's try to appreciate it for what it is. Because like I said before, a lot of these kids, this is it for them for their basketball playing days. They're not going to go to college. You know, even you know, D3 or you know, JUCO or like a community college or whatever. It's, you know, just I just think of this as kind of doing a disservice to the majority in the favor of a few.
There was a few other, like we mentioned at the outset, a few other revelations. One move that I love, the seeding of basketball and wrestlers. Once you get to the state tournament, top four wrestlers, I believe, will be identified, and then the four teams in each division in basketball will be identified 1 through 4. I love that move. I think that I've argued that it should have been implemented a long time ago, and I think it should still be snowballing to other sports, like girls volleyball doesn't seed yet, but we're seeing it now in soccer, in tennis, and boys volleyball. So I like the direction that's going. I'm very excited to see that they're making that move. And also, the hockey thing is interesting. I don't know if you have a strong feeling about that. Four Division I teams, four Division II teams now. I wasn't aware that there was a push to make it two divisions. Apparently there was. Initial thought there was, well, why not still have like 8D1 teams and 4D2 teams? But, you know, 4 and 4 seems more in line with what they have going on in other sports. I don't know if you have any strong feelings about that.
Yeah, real quick on the seeding thing. I think Minnesota does seeding here. I think it's great. It's wonderful. The thing that I'm curious to see is how it works with four teams in basketball. You know, there's a lot of gamesmanship that coaches like to do, and I think it's a little bit easier the less amount of teams that you have.
Agreed,
to kind of make the seeding go the way that you want. I'd almost rather see them go with like a committee.
Well, maybe they will, yeah.
That either, and maybe the committee just seeds the top two teams instead of seeding 1 through 4. I don't, maybe that's an easier way to do it.
Yeah, but I feel like you come up with the same problem then. The ultimate problem is that a team that doesn't, you're gonna have, whatever, maybe not. Maybe
yeah,
not.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you just try. Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, and I would like to see them seed other things. You know, maybe if they could seed football a little further out. You know, at least hopefully the final four can be seeded in football. It'd be nice if they could somehow seed the final eight. But yeah, but with the hockey, this is another. I don't get when the WIA keeps adding divisions. It's like they're also taking away games at state. You know, they're taking away one of the hockey games that's at state now. So. Because you'd have the four quarterfinal games, the two semifinals, and the championship. Now you're having four semifinals, two in each division, and then two championship games. Mm-hmm. So I would rather see them keep eight large school teams, whatever they're going to call it, if it's D1, D2, or large or small, and maybe have the D2 teams play on Wednesday night, and then have the semifinals on Wednesday, and then the championship on Saturday. So you're not driving back and forth on back-to-back days. I don't know. It seems the WI is very afraid to extend their tournaments to Wednesday. And that's one thing that Minnesota does, and, you know, they really don't think twice about it. And, you know, I don't know why the WI is so cautious about extending it another day. But, I mean, I would like to see eight D1 teams, eight of the bigger school teams, and then four of the smaller school. And I think there is a push. You know, it'd be interesting to see how this breaks down, because the big thing in hockey now is our co-ops. I mean, you have like these co-ops that's like the entire alphabet. You know, schools from like two or three counties that are joining forces a lot of times because they have to. Well, other schools are saying, hey, if there's only one division, maybe we should, you know, to have a more competitive team, let's bring on this school, even though that one co-op could maybe field two or three teams by itself.
Right.
So it'd be kind of interesting to see how this affects that. You know, maybe, you know, I don't pay as much attention to Wisconsin high school hockey. And to be honest, you know, our hockey teams in Minnesota really aren't at the level of some of the top teams in the state here. So it's not as big over here either. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see like where that dividing line is. You know, will that second division, you know, just primarily be smaller schools? I think somebody threw out like Madison Edgewood that tries to go it alone. Is this kind of for them? I know like Eau Claire, each Eau Claire school had its own team, Eau Claire North and Eau Claire Memorial. Is it for like schools like that? I don't know where the dividing line would necessarily be.
Will some of these co-ops unravel as schools realize, well, there's just as good an opportunity in D2 as D1. Why don't half of our schools go one way, half go the other way? Now we're both D2 programs and we'll see how that plays out. You know, there could be some of that too, or schools deciding to run their own program as opposed to joining up with other schools with the way this is set up.
It might, especially if you take away, four spots at the state tournament for some of those larger school teams. I mean, how are the sectionals going to be broken down? Are you just going to have like Eau Claire, the northwest part of the state, that's where a lot of the best hockey is played, northwest and then like the Wausau area.
Right.
So are you going to have one school from that whole area go to state?
Oh, that's because, a really good point.
Are you going to leave out an Eau Claire Memorial, a Superior, a Hudson, a Wausau West, in favor of, adding, some of these smaller schools in D2? I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, it'd be interesting to see how they break up the sectionals. Because a lot of times the sectionals, as you know, that just depends where somebody at the WIA starts to count schools.
Yes, agreed.
And it's totally, it could be you could have eight different people do it, and you'd have eight different setups. But
yeah. And we've talked about this a little bit, but the WIA mentality, it seems, is to treat every school as, imagine it as one person or one school, and everyone is equal in the eyes of their arrangement. So it doesn't matter if a school is bigger or covers a bigger area; they are going to get the same shake as a small, tiny D5 school, and that's why tournaments get set up this way. They want everybody to have an equal shot. It has nothing to do with proportional with distribution of enrollment or anything like that. So that's part of what you're seeing here. Last thing, and also a biggie, is the change possibly to basketball layout, where teams in small schools in urban areas, private or public, but let's not kid ourselves, primarily we're talking about private schools in bigger
areas.
And
like a handful of these private schools. I think both you and I know exactly the type of school that they're
yes,
talking about.
We certainly do, and they're going to be playing up to Division III. Opening up an opportunity in theory for D4 or D5 to not have to face off with some of these public schools. Okay, so we're talking about like La Crosse Aquinas is going to be D3. Dominican was already D3. They're going to stay there. Racine St. Catharines, you're going to be D3. Martin Luther, which had a good year in boys basketball, they were already D3. That's where they stay. There are some interesting ones on there. Like, I don't know why St. Mary's Springs outside of Fond du Lac doesn't move up, but North Fond du Lac does. And it all depends on their formula for where teams are located. I think they're using some census data, so I don't even know how that all plays out. But
yeah, I think I forget the name of the person who kind of put this forward, so I apologize to him. But I think it is healthy, I think, to have the discussion and to look at it this way rather than just the flat, publics versus privates, which I think everybody can agree is not the way that we should go about this, And I don't know what the answer is. Maybe. To me, maybe it's something as simple as there are no, private schools in D5. There are no private schools in D5 or no schools within 30 miles of a city center and whatever you use to determine city centers. So maybe, you kind of keep D5 for those teams who, every 16 years they manage to put together, a great basketball team. And then this kind of clears up the road for them to get to state and to have their moment for their town. But I don't know how you can with open enrollment the way it is, with AAU in the summer, with there are good players everywhere. I don't really know how you can fairly determine you have an advantage because your school operates like this, so you have to play up against these other schools and look at another school with the same, they still play five players on the court at the same time and say you could stay where you are. That kind of gets a little bit tricky to me. I don't know.
I think if the WIA had its way, the movie Hoosiers would play out every year. Some small village with 50 people would have a winning championship basketball team, and it doesn't work out that way. You're still going to have teams like, these aren't accurate examples, but like Green Bay NEW Lutheran in D5, or Columbus Catholic in D5, or even a Randolph that's a public school but just has this machine going every year. you're always going to have those powerhouses sneak up on you. But I, you know, kind of echoing what you said, I kind of love this idea. I don't know why I didn't really think of it before or how much it was discussed before, but this does strike as close as I think we can get to the root of what they're trying to fix. Big, you know, big communities that can draw from a wide area or a wide population base, being able to build these great programs that's tiny, tiny schools, like they do have an advantage that way. And it doesn't matter if you're public or private. You know, Howard's Grove is an example outside of Sheboygan. I mean, I think it's debatable whether that team should play up in D3, but that's an example of a team that would benefit presumably from being near a population center. I think it's a great idea. It makes sense to me. It at least shows, I think, addressing the root of the problem and not trying to penalize schools for being private schools and quote unquote recruiting. I think this is probably closer to what they should be looking at. I love it.
Yeah, it is. And I think it kind of needs to be tweaked a little bit. And
definitely,
you know, I think West Salem may have been one of the schools that was like bumped up because of its location to La Crosse. And maybe that's true. I mean, West Salem is kind of a big area and it's hard though, because there are so many unique, you know, setups for these schools. And I don't know. And I know this isn't what we're talking about, but I think, you know, some of these schools that people are sick of seeing at the state tournament winning at all, I think the one thing that people are overlooking is these are schools by and large that have coaching continuity. You know, they have parents buying in, you know, they have a history of a proud program. And that, I think, more than anything is why they are at the state tournament every year. Does it help that, you know, Dominican is located so close to Milwaukee and the new UW-Milwaukee men's basketball coach with his, you know, top 100 son are, you know, maybe uh-huh. possibly looking at Dominican, or that Giannis's brother went to Dominican? Yeah, I mean.
Did you just call him Giannis? Come on.
I think I did.
Even if you're living in Minnesota, you know how Giannis. To spell Giannis. Or how to pronounce Giannis. Unbelievable.
I was mentally preparing to try to say his last name, and I knew I can't do it.
That was a choke job, John Caster.
It was.
Forgive you, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I went to a private school, so I mean, I have a soft spot in my heart for them. But
well, you went to Marquette, the biggest private school. That's not an actual private school. It's a factory.
It is one of the few schools in Wisconsin that has a multiplier already.
Yeah, no doubt, because they're all dudes. Got it. Yeah, I mean, you hit it right on the head, though, and it is about coaching and community and youth programs and stuff, especially at the lower levels, and those are the programs. I mean, Randolph is a great example. I brought it up already once. I mean, they have no advantage. They're in the middle of nowhere, but except for their coaching is amazing. They have an incredible tradition and just success begetting success over and over again. And that's why you have players in the Milwaukee area gravitating towards private schools. They've had success. Catholic Memorial is a good example in Waukesha County. They have success. More people want to go there. Marquette on the boys' side. I mean, there's a reason why their programs continue to win year after year after year. Because if you're elite in the sports Marquette is elite at, you want to go to Marquette. It's got nothing to do with recruiting.
And even, you know, even Randolph, you know, in their run, I can't remember exactly where the guy came from, but they had the transfer come from, I think, like way up northwest, like near Superior, who transferred to Randolph.
Whoa, wow, that's a move.
And that may be wrong. And if somebody is listening and wants to call me out for that, I know it was a big move. It wasn't like they were a town over and decided to go to Randolph instead of like Beaver Dam or Columbus or something.
Right.
So, I mean, that stuff happens all the time. A school I covered when I was in Eau Claire, Fall Creek, they went to the state tournament. They were the only public school in the, I think it was D3 field, and they got beat by Racine St. Catharines. And, you know, we got a lot of emails like, hey, this isn't fair. You know, we're this tiny little community of Fall Creek. Well, Fall Creek had two open enrollment transfers from Altoona.
What about that, Fall
right,
Creek?
Right, right. So, And I mean, maybe you could look at Racine, and maybe all those kids went to, you know, Racine Catholic schools growing up. So there's a lot of examples of that. And I think Travis Wilson said it on Twitter the other day. Most of the times that schools get busted for recruiting, they are public schools.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite example is a few years ago, the D1 state semifinals, four teams, all of them public schools, and three of the four had a major contribution from a transfer. Matt Helt, who is at Marquette, was playing for Nina, had come from one of the Appleton schools, Appleton West, I think. Milwaukee Vincent had some kids from Martin Luther who actually transferred from the private school to the public school that were starters. And then, I know McGuanago was there. They did not have a transfer. And Germantown had the Beardens, who had transferred from Menominee Falls. So
yeah, and Eau Claire North years ago.
The great Evan Anderson came
in. Yeah, Evan Anderson was from Stanley.
Yep.
And Connor Miller is also from Stanley, and he went to Regis. So, I mean, Stanley missed out on, you know, both those guys went to D1 schools. You know, Stanley Boyd missed out on having two D1 guys, and one of them went to a public school.
Amazing. All right, John, well, we're going to be talking about this a ton over the next several weeks. Thanks for stopping by and chatting about it. Crazy day to be covering high school sports yesterday, Thursday, as we record this on Friday, and I'm sure these debates are not going to stop here. There's going to be a lot more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just glad I'm in Minnesota, where we don't have a shot clock, and we have basically district football. And
everything's great in Minnesota. Yeah, the communist country of Minnesota.
We have eight teams that go to state basketball in each division. And,
oh my gosh, yeah. It is utopia. All I have to do is move everything west, and we can do this.
Yeah, the only thing that Wisconsin has is the state track meet. And that's true. Maybe state baseball I like a little bit better, too. But
well, that's
other
fine.
Than that.
And state track is right next door to you. So fortunately, you can still get the best of both worlds there. It's amazing.
Yes. Yes, I can. Absolutely.
All right, John. Thanks for stopping by. We'll chat again soon.
You bet.